Thank you for tuning into episode 73 of The Virtual Couch. I'm your host, Tony Overbay. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, certified mindful habit coach, writer, speaker, husband, father of four, ultra marathon runner, and creator of The Path Back, an online pornography addiction recovery program that is helping people reclaim their lives from pornography addiction. If you or anyone that you know is struggling with pornography addiction, please point them to pathbackrecovery.com. There you can download a short ebook that describes five common mistakes that people make when trying to overcome pornography addiction. Again, that's pathbackrecovery.com. You can also find a link to that off of tonyoverbay.com, and I would encourage you to go there and sign up to receive more information on some exciting new programs that I'm working on. And I promise you, I won't sell your email address. As a matter of fact, I will hardly email you at all, to a fault, some say. And while you're there, take a look at the tab at the top. I believe it says forum. It's a free, anonymous, strength-based forum for anyone interested in connecting with others who are already looking to break free from pornography addiction, or if you've already broken free and you want to help others, or for just anybody who wants to champion the cause, because the cause needs champions. Pornography is continuing to grow at a rapid rate, and unfortunately, it is not going anywhere. So we need to help in the fight. Gone are the days of if your kid sees pornography, it's 100% a matter of when, and what do we do about that? How do we promote productive conversation? So please stop by the forum, sign up and participate. And I talk about, you know, when our kids will see it, but I mean, obviously this is a problem. Pornography comes into play, and I believe now the research shows over half of all divorces, and you know, the numbers are pretty staggering about how often people are seeing pornography, and then even when they're acting out and saying that this is the last time. So please do find help. There's help. I mean, it works. So I would encourage you to stop by pathbackrecovery.com or that forum off of tonyoverbay.com. You can find me at Virtual Couch on Instagram, Couch Virtual on Twitter, or Tony Overbay on Twitter, and Tony Overbay, licensed marriage and family therapist on Facebook. And I want to encourage anybody who is dealing with any type of betrayal trauma, and this is specifically for women dealing with betrayal trauma, to please visit bloomforwomen.com. Betrayal trauma is a very real it's a very real problem, and the symptoms are very similar to PTSD. The people who have designed the bloomforwomen.com site and the content on the site have years and years of research. And I want to assure you that, again, there is help for that as well. And I personally have done extensive training, over a year now of training in the field of betrayal trauma. And it is, you know, I've always worked with the people who have the addiction. And so learning about what that's like on the other side of the coin, those who have felt betrayed, has just been, it's given me so much more empathy for what the person who feels betrayed is going through. But again, there's help. So if you're experiencing the betrayal of a spouse for an affair, an emotional affair, if you've recently discovered your partner maybe has pornography addiction or compulsive sexual behavior, please stop by bloomforwomen.com, use the coupon code VIRTUALCOUCH, all one word, and you get 1 month free to their evidence-based information, programs, an entire community of support that is designed to help you grow and heal. And what a transition here. If you shave, men or women, legs, chest, head, beard, you name it, please check out longtime sponsor Eli's Extracts. Eli's makes an all-natural organic shave cream scented with essential oils. Please visit Eli's-Extracts.com. That's Eli's-Extracts.com to learn more about this incredible shave cream and use coupon code VIRTUALCOUCH, all one word, to receive 25% off your order of any size. Okay, all the business taken care of. Today, I have a truly wonderful guest on the Virtual Couch. His name is Ryan Walton, and he has a very, very nice-looking, very well-put-together, good content-filled website called DaringToDad.com. Daring, DaringToDad.com. And a former guest on the podcast, I call him from the book review, Jonathan Alva, recommended Ryan for the show because Jonathan was aware of Ryan's work with dads. And as many of you may know, if you listen to a few episodes of The Virtual Couch, I left my job in technology after a decade because I felt called to work with men in this role of therapist to help them become better husbands, better fathers, and little did I know that it would take me into the world of addiction recovery and then put me right smack dab in couples therapy. And I'm so grateful for that. And, you know, I worked, it was interesting, I left my job in technology after a decade, even though things were going kind of well. It seemed like a pretty crazy decision at the time. I think I was about 31, 32. And that's when I went back to school to get my master's in counseling and head down this journey. And I'm grateful each and every day for following that prompting or that call to be a therapist because I love my job. I mean, absolutely love it. It can be heavy working with couples who maybe are on the verge of divorce or individuals who might maybe feel like they've lost hope, but there's just nothing more satisfying than truly being there with them and helping them feel like there is hope. And then, you know, using the tools that may not even know that exist within them to help them drive change. So Ryan, I feel like, is a kindred soul, another one of these men who also felt called to help dads. And when I first combed through his website, when I was doing a little bit of the research, I was particularly drawn toward, there was a couple of articles that he wrote of his discovery of Meniere's disease. And if you don't know much about that, Ryan's going to talk about that. I've had a couple of clients that have Meniere's disease, and it affects your hearing. And so, and it's, Ryan goes into some detail about that. But more importantly, what really touched me is Ryan shares a pretty incredible story of what he and his wife went through in trying to conceive, how they dealt with miscarriage, and just a lot around that. And I think that that's a really touching thing that, and in particular for men, I mean, for women both, of just what those emotions are like going through that. So please check out Ryan's website, daringtodad.com. You can follow him on Instagram and Facebook as well. So now, on to my interview with Ryan Walton of daringtodad.com. My guest today is Ryan Walton. Ryan, welcome to the virtual couch.
So glad to be here. Thank
I'm excited.
You.
Yeah. We've been trying to put this together for a little while.
It has been. We're kind of connected. Yeah.
Yeah. So are you okay? Let's just jump in. I want to know your origins. Actually, before that, I want to know, I mean, you are dressed very stylish.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. And I feel like, in my last episode where I had a guest in here, I was very self-conscious about that.
Don't be.
Right? Okay. But I mean.
No, you look great.
Oh, you're very kind.
Yeah, yeah.
I think at some point then I want to have maybe we can do a podcast on, you know, how to make a dad look good, you know?
Yeah, sure, man. Yeah, that dad style.
Yeah, yeah, exactly,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
All right, so give us a little bit of your background. You are from?
So originally from the state of Texas, kind of the homeland, but spent most of my life in California, San Diego, went to college in LA, and then up to Sacramento. I've been in Sacramento since 2004, so it's become home for us. I live in Sacramento with my wife, Samantha. We just celebrated 12 years of marriage. We have two kids, a 5-year-old and a 1-year-old.
Nice.
So my background ranges.
Go ahead. When you were just casually thrown out when I was getting to know you, when I was in a band. And I just feel like was that the rock and roll lifestyle?
Not really. It was much more kind of the church music scene. So I picked up a guitar when I was about 15 years old at the summer camp. And I was just like, I love this thing.
Yeah.
I love it. And started playing guitar in church, really got like thrown out onto the stage and just kind of forced myself to learn how to play. I come from this very musical family.
Okay.
My mom, my grandparents. And so I started playing guitar and singing in church. And that led to kind of doing kind of bands within that scene.
Yeah, it's like Christian rock?
Totally. Okay. Yeah. And so in church music. And so I ended up getting a scholarship to school, to college to do that kind of thing. And the school just funded projects. We got to travel around the country and do, you know, churches, camps, conferences, all that kind of stuff. So that's what I did for a long time.
Do church rock bands have roadies? I mean, do you have people following?
It's not that cool. we got to do some really cool events and meet some really great people.
Yeah.
And I built some fantastic relationships. And
what's the biggest crowd you ever played to?
Probably like 5,000 or 6,000 people.
Okay. So that's the part where I still feel like that would be an experience like none other.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, we always had great feedback and met some great people along the way. It was a cool experience. It's funny. I have in my house, I have my grandfather's baby grand piano. I have my guitars on the wall hung up and, I don't play nearly as much as I used to.
Okay.
But that was a big part of my life for a long time.
Okay. Whenever I find out that, especially a teenager that I'm working with is practicing guitar, did you begin with, Smoke in the Water or, Stairway to Heaven?
Neither. Okay. I had this songbook with these chord charts and like the back cover, and I flipped it around. I started teaching myself and a lot of kind of campy church songs.
Oh, okay.
That's what I started out with and just kind of picked up and learned from there. So yeah, totally self-taught. I don't read music. Okay. I like, play by ear. You know, I kind of fake it till you make it type of thing.
Okay. So, yeah. So do you miss, I mean, do you miss getting up on stage?
Or I do. There are times when I miss doing that. I miss, you know, there's definitely a vibe and an energy that you get from that. And it was a big part of my life for a long time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there are times I do miss that.
Okay.
I got to say, so full confession, I kind of have this secret desire to just like, I want to get together a band and do like learn a bunch of like really great like 90s music and like do like a 90s cover band.
Yeah.
I just want to do one gig.
Okay.
One gig and then we're done. Okay. We're done after that. I just want to do like one gig, some 90s rock.
What 90s songs are you thinking?
I don't know.
I'm an 80s guy.
So yeah, sure. So like, I think about like some 90s, great 90s rock, like the Gin Blossoms.
Okay.
That style triangle? Music, like, Oasis, I mean, like Oasis, okay. Like some of that, you know, some of that music, some of that rock music. Just like one show.
And that's can I just play the triangle or something
sure.
like that?
Yeah, you're more than welcome to.
I'm in.
We'll find some songs for
okay.
you.
Okay, all right. I'm in with this band idea. So the band breaks up.
Yeah. Okay. Well, band broke up, meaning we all like pretty much graduated college and went our own different ways. And these guys are still, strangely enough, all the guys that I was in a band with live here in Sacramento now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. We've all kind of wound up in the same place. But yeah, you know, graduated college. I moved up here. Did the same thing up here with some different folks for a while.
Mm-hmm. And then right out of college, when you got out here, it was...
Yeah, so I moved up. I took a job as a pastor right out of college and moved up here in 2004.
Now, did you have... I mean, so you're pretty young at that time.
I was totally young. Probably too young.
Really?
To do something like that, in my opinion. But... you know, you learn a lot in your 20s.
Yeah.
I was 24, came up here, you know, I knew everything.
Okay.
And
I
was a co-founding pastor and kind of did a lot of the creative arts and kind of the worship music and, that type of stuff. So communications, web design, creative arts. It was a community that we started was very, that was kind of the way that community expressed itself was through the arts. So it's through song and creative writing and painting and photography, all these different kind of artistic mediums. That was a big part of the culture. And so that was really my job to help facilitate those experiences.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And then did you meet your wife here?
I did. I met her like 2 weeks after I moved up here.
Okay.
The couple, the actual other pastor that I was working with at the time, just mutual friends we met and we dated for about a year or engaged for 6 months and got married. We were young. We got married in 2006. And so we just celebrated 12 years.
Nice. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
So there's some things in your, well, you want to talk a little bit about the website and then I want to go into some of the things that you covered on there.
Sure.
So how long have you had Daring to Dad?
So daringtodad.com is about a year old.
Okay.
I was blogging for a long time back kind of in those the early church days.
Okay.
And really kind of during a season of life where I was, asking a lot of questions about faith and doing a lot of searching. Eventually kind of through some circumstances really had to kind of step away from the blog.
Okay.
And just stepped away from it for a while. But you know, writing was always an outlet for me.
Okay.
Sharing ideas and connecting and communicating. You know, I work in communications as my day job professionally. And I knew there was a season of life where I wanted to get back into that.
Yeah.
And becoming a parent, being a father, you know, there are so many experiences that we have on the daily, you know, that are just so impactful, so intense, so crazy and messy. I knew that this may be an opportunity to come back and re-enter into the blog space. So I wanted to create an open space to talk about fatherhood. And so Daring to Dad was born out of that. First, honestly, it was just an outlet for me.
Okay.
I just wanted to write. I just wanted to get out there and share these ideas and let them land. And it's kind of taken shape over the past year.
Okay. I have to ask, this is my first, we're going to go on a little ADD journey here.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had someone, we were helping out in a nursery at a place, my wife and I were. And somebody was telling me now about, I was making a joke about the little bulb that would suck the snot out.
Burgers out.
There's something now that you suck it.
Yeah.
Are you serious? Like, have you done this?
Dude, it works so good.
Okay. Everybody says this.
I mean, you know, to anyone else who doesn't have kids or it sounds disgusting. But yeah. It's like, it's a tube. There's like all sorts of sponges. Yeah. Stuff. You don't actually get anything up to the mouth.
The first time you suck it though, are you thinking, what if?
No. I mean, like it's funny. Those first off. So parents, any viewers,
viewers, or listeners, because I heard parents, it's amazing.
I will say this. I've tried both. So there's the little ball sucking, you squeeze it. And it goes out. but the actual manual is 10 times better. If you're going to do it, just, you got to make it happen. It's when it's, you're a kid and they're like having a hard time breathing, because it's not like, there's nothing that you would not do, you know, yeah, in that circumstance. Right. And it's fine. You know, it's a little gross. I'm watching that, but like, everything is gross.
Yeah.
So it's just part of it. It's
like your kid's pooping up his back.
Yeah. And it's part of the package. Honestly, there are grosser things than the booger sucker thing.
So, I have to tell how this, now I can make this somewhat productive. Yeah. So I was making a conversation. Somebody had said that used the term common sense.
Yeah.
And I had a good friend of mine once say, you know, he's like, well, common sense is a pretty ambiguous term. And the person he was saying that to was like, no, it's common sense. Common sense is common sense. And so then he said, so if you're in Africa and in a certain tribe or something that he was aware of, and the little kid sneezes and has snot all over, the mom's going to just bend down, suck it out with her mouth and spit it and move on. And you're going to think, oh my gosh, like that's, I got to call CPS, right? If that thing's happening. But then if they saw us, then take some tissue and then just mangle the kid's face with it, you know, that over there, they're going to say, what is he doing? You know?
Right.
So I was kind of sharing this and saying, so, I mean, you know, to us, we would never suck out of someone's nose. And then the person just confidently said, oh no, I did that this morning. Right. Yeah. And I thought, no, you don't understand. So that was the genesis of the booger sucker, right?
Yes.
Okay. Listeners can pause and go to Amazon and look up, I guess, this booger suction device.
Yeah. Okay.
Last thing I thought we'd be talking about.
Yeah. Who knows what you'll get with that kind of search, but you know, you'll true. See.
Yeah, exactly right. Okay. So, Daring to Dad. So it was an outlet. It was a creative outlet. Mm-hmm. And, did you start getting some feedback?
Yeah, absolutely. I think especially around, you know, certain topics. Here's, you know, I heard once, I think this is really important, is that, you know, when you share your story, you give someone else permission to tell theirs.
I like that.
And when you walk into a space and you're vulnerable about experiences, you give other people permission to reach out and say like, oh, you know, how, like, hey, I've had that experience too. I'm, you know, I think even wider culture right now, we're seeing that with people sharing stories that are hard. I mean, the Me Too movement and all this kind of stuff is people becoming vulnerable, and there's connection that takes place. And that's like the high for me. Mm-hmm. Like that's the moment where it's like, okay, you share the vulnerability, which I think in our culture that men, that is kind of beaten out of us at an early age.
Sure.
And to be vulnerable, to say, hey, I don't have it figured out. I don't have it together. This is where I'm struggling. I find that's really powerful. And so that's really one of my big drives is having a vulnerable space where dads can connect and look across from someone else and say, wow, hey, me too. I've had this experience. And so that's really where it's at.
So I have to say that the whole reason I got into counseling was I felt this call to work for dads. And I've said this on my podcast before, and then dads didn't come into counseling because that's too vulnerable. Right. And so then I have found that, you know, if you really dig into the research, I mean, you've got the, what are the models? It's, John Wayne, it's the Lone Ranger, it's the strong silent type, it's Rub a Little Dirt in It. And then there's that concept where if they get vulnerable, then their partner is going to say, that's not who I wanted. Yeah. Right. But then I have to tell you as a therapist, I don't think I've ever run into that situation where a wife hasn't heard the vulnerability or, you know, a parent and then thought less of someone. Yeah. It's like, thank you for finally opening up.
I think today in our culture, we need to talk, have really important conversations about masculinity.
Yes.
And we need to have conversations about what healthy masculinity looks like. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, one of the big themes of what I like to talk about, and especially raising kids, both sons and daughters, to talk about vulnerability as a strength, about kindness and compassion as strength, to embrace feeling and emotion, because I think when a lot of times that's beaten out of men, we're missing a part of ourselves. When we say that, you know, hey, emotion is left to females and women,
or weak, and
we even use that in our language a lot of times. So, you know, we talk about hear things like, hey, don't be a sissy, or maybe even things a bit more vulgar. The underlying tone in that, or hey, you know, is emotion is less and is inferior. and maybe even extension that like women are inferior. So I think that is, we need to have really open conversations about what that looks like and what healthy masculinity looks like, because I think it's very important, especially in today's climate.
So it's funny, I have found myself now trying to be aware of that. And even phrases you don't think about where, you know, I'm playing catch with somebody and somebody will say, man, I threw that one like a girl, right? Or playing golf and they leave a putt short and it's like, oh, you hit it with your purse. And I mean, now I'm very aware that those are not, those are very productive comments, right?
Yeah, not at all. And yeah. I think we need to start like calling that out and have those kind of conversations. Because I think it's, if you take small things like that and escalate it to a larger social level, I think that's where we're seeing a lot of issues these days. And I think it needs to be talked about, it needs to be addressed with men, to other men, and called out in environments like that.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. So that, so I love that is, you're preaching that message of vulnerability. There are still, and I think this is one of those things to say, somebody can be vulnerable and authentic and open and show feelings, and they will still run into people that are going to tell them that's weak.
Yeah.
But that's okay. So, I mean, that's why I like when you tell your story, I love it. I haven't heard it that way in my, you know, in my office, I often talking about normalizing when someone says, is it normal that, you know, and cause they feel like they're the only person that has those, you know, feels insecure about being a dad or isn't sure what to do, or is getting really upset when, a kid's crying and they're supposed to know what to do, or they don't know how to comfort their wife if she has postpartum depression, or you know, those sort of things, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, right.
Absolutely. Because I think, you know, when it comes to vulnerability, I think people respond to it, and you never know what someone's going through.
Yeah.
And I think it's in those moments where I probably resisted vulnerability enough, but walked into it anyway, that the greatest connections were made, the greatest change was able to happen, reconciliation, forgiveness, whatever. Those are the breakthrough moments. And so I think it's an important part.
So, okay. And there were a couple of things in particular that I was really drawn to on your website, and maybe I'll go a little bit out of order of what around that idea of vulnerability. You're pretty open on your website about your wife and I. You say you had two healthy children, but you also lost two in the womb, and understand the pain and heartache that accompany miscarriage. And you say something I hope to share more about. So, I mean, you know, you kind of drive with that. I've got some thoughts there too, but I'd love to know what that was like.
Well, it's an experience that is, that a lot of people have. Mm. And we know that because, we shared really openly, with, the first time we went through this, I think it was on a Saturday, we kind of did the whole social media, like, hey, we're having a baby. And like, you know, my son at the time, you know, we made this like really cute video and went kind of public with, you know, the pregnancy. The following Thursday was when we lost the baby. And so it was hanging out there. So we really had to go back and say, hey, this is kind of what happened, and share a little bit about that. And man, the private messages and the texts and the phone calls of people that I hadn't heard from like in years, like talking, like sharing their story as well, and talking about their experience with that, and was pretty incredible. So it's an experience that so many people have, and everybody is going to kind of deal with it in ways that work for them. But we found for us that talking about it, being open about it, there is healing in the solidarity we found with other people. Doesn't make it any easier. Right. It doesn't make it any hard. It doesn't make it, you know, go away. And that impacts you. I mean, that leaves a mark. I mean, that creates new experiences and neural pathways and whatever else in your brain that those kinds of things happen. And so, the first time we went through it was pretty late in, the pregnancy. It was 15 weeks. So it was late. It was a very traumatic experience for, especially for my wife, for both of us. You know, it was emergency room and hospital, and you know, she actually had to deliver. And that was a really, really intense night, one that we'll never forget.
What do you mean when you were going through that? I mean, was that a time where you felt like you should know what to do? I mean, did you feel just as I don't know, as raw and emotional as you, I don't know, what was that
Yeah,
like?
So definitely it's scary. And we didn't have any idea what we were doing. We were asking questions and things like that. And there's something that kind of kicks into gear sometimes in the moment for anybody who's in a situation where my focus was making sure that, you know, I had to be my wife's advocate in at the hospital and for what was going on, asking those kind of questions and making sure that she knew that we were going to be okay. I had to be, I had to show strength in that situation. I mean, she was like incredible and showed it. We both had to show strength in some different ways. You know, we both definitely had moments of, we both broke down. I remember that, that first night, and I'll just share the story. You know, we had an incredible experience. You know, you're in the ER, and the ER is never a fun place to be,
Sure.
Whether it's you or anyone else. And you have all these doctors and nurses going through and people are trying to take care of you, but they also have a lot of other people as well. But we, Samantha had delivered and we were sitting in there just kind of sitting with it in that moment. And this woman came by our room and peeked in and you could tell she was like on her way out. You know, she had her fleece on, she had her messenger bag, was on her way out. And she stopped in and she told us that she was one of the doctors there in the ER, and she came in. And she just had tears in her eyes.
Wow.
And she walked over and she put her hand on my wife's leg and was like, she told us she had recently been through the same experience. I mean, she just sat there and she just wept with us.
Wow.
Like, it's emotional talking about it now.
Yeah.
And she shared it with us again, that she stopped, looked us in the eye and had that moment of like powerful human connection. I will never forget that moment. You know, I tried to find out like who, like, you know, I think weeks later, tried to find out who it was. I was trying to send her a note, but I was like, man, is that creepy? I don't know. Oh, right, trying to like, look at, but like, she, like, that was whatever language you want to put around that. You want to call it a holy experience or something else. In that moment was incredibly powerful when she just stopped. She could have kept on going, but she didn't. And again, that's the moment of that vulnerability on her part that made that connection. And was healing even in a traumatic moment.
What you can tell is you're telling it now. That was like, that was special, right?
Yeah.
I wanted to share, and I hate following a story like that because that's powerful. But I remember the first time as a therapist when I'm processing a miscarriage between a couple, and I'm pretty new at this point. And I remember the wife was very upset, and I'm watching the husband, and I remember in my mind even I'm thinking, well, I mean, they can always try again. I mean, I'm not about to say that out loud, but and then the husband said that. And there was this part of me that was like, oh, okay, oh, good. You know, he's making a good point. And then I'll never forget. And I can remember even the woman that it was where she just said, you know, I can appreciate that. But then she shared that she said, that's easy for you because you were going to work and you were doing your thing. And she's like, I already, and they had miscarried fairly early, but she said, I already had the baby was named. I knew what clothes that she was going to wear and I knew what school she was going to. And I was going to, I couldn't wait for her wedding. And you just felt something in the room at that moment.
Yes.
And I feel like that was such a powerful experience. And I'm so grateful I experienced that early because, you know, and I think I'm saying that because I think a lot of guys, when they don't know what to say, and they're afraid to say, I don't know what to say.
Mm-hmm.
Then they come out with those things like, hey, we'll try again, you know? And
we want to fix it.
Exactly.
We want to fix it in the moment. We want to fix the moment for them. It sometimes it comes from a place of wanting
absolutely
to help. And that was, you know, that was really important. I think, you know, just to really know that, understand that the experience is incredibly different.
Mm-hmm.
There are parts of that experience that we share together. But there are also things that we experience separate.
Yeah.
For me, it took me a while, honestly, because, you know, in that moment, I'm trying to be like the rock. I'm trying to be strong. You know, she's going through so much and I want to allow her that space, allow her to break down, allow her to feel some of those things. Sometimes it was hard to find where do I do that? You know, where's my space to be able to have a breakdown moment? Yeah. Where's my space to be able to do that? And it was interesting on the way here because, you know, you kind of tipped me off that we might be talking about this. And I wanted to talk to my wife and make sure she was okay with me sharing some of the story as well, because it's her truth and as well. And she jokingly said, you know, I'm like, hey, I want to share about a little bit about my experience with this. And she's like, yeah, I'm really interested to hear the podcast and how you felt about it. And so jokingly, because it is, so sometimes, you know, we want to power through.
Yeah.
And it was, I think, you know, for me, sifting through that and knowing how different the experience was, and it didn't happen to my body. And there is emotional for me that I know it's not the same in appreciating that. And not trying to get in there and fix it, but just be incredibly responsive and attentive and listening to what her needs would be and be able to respond to those. So, and again, like, this is just my experience. I'm not a therapist. I have my mom and brother are both, they're the therapists in the family. But that's kind of what we learned and what I learned.
Well, and I love that. I hate to do the, well, I, as a therapist, you know, but I do feel,
you are.
It's true. Yeah. But I do love the, and I'm a big fan of, being able to give something a voice. So if someone is triggered, if they do have a memory that they don't feel like they can't share it, you know, that they are able to kind of say, I'm being extremely vulnerable here too. We have four kids, and my fourth, when my wife was pregnant, then we had a moment where we thought maybe she was losing the baby. We go in and we found out, no, you know, one is there, and there had been another. And it was like, to this day, sometimes we'll get, you know, I don't know, every now and again, I'll say, I wonder what the twin would have looked like, or where would they would be. And I'm grateful that my wife will bring that up from time to time as well. Mm-hmm. Turn a little humor on it too. Yeah. So we were, I had a medium on my show quite a while ago. Mm-hmm. Wonderful woman, Julie Christensen. She invited me to go to us to go to a show Saturday night. And so we go there and we're trying to sit in the back. So I'm frightened of if she's going to approach me and say that she sees something or whatever.
Yeah,
she did. And it turns out that she was, you know, kind of then honed in on someone that was around us, not necessarily us for this. She's like, I'm seeing this person or whatever. And it was somebody blonde hair or whatever. And my wife and I we went out to dinner afterward and we both, you know, said, I don't know, were you kind of wondering if that was, you know, it was a grandfather or whatever. And then we both were kind of like, I mean, you know, was that the twin, you know, or whatever. Yeah, and I just love that we could both kind of just even talk about that, you know? So I appreciate you sharing that, I mean, your experience, it was vulnerable. You didn't have to know. You didn't have to have everything figured out. Mm-hmm. So did you end up having time for a breakdown? I mean, when you kind of talk about that?
Yeah. So I think, you know, we definitely had our, I think my breakdown was initially that night. And for me, I tend to live like up here a lot. I had a lot of moments of just quietness and stillness, I think, over the course of those weeks. I think in reevaluating it, I probably wish I would have been able to spend more time processing that emotionally. I think I really focused a lot on my wife and what her needs were, and I probably used some of that to cover up.
Sure,
some of that. I think we do that. We find whatever we can to okay, you know, that's something that I know I tend to do in my life is, you know, what do I need to do to like not have to kind of sit through whatever pain is going on right now.
Yeah.
Even if it's like hell, even if it's doing something good.
Right.
We can still use that as, you know, this defense for that. And I think I did that a lot through this. I used, you know, my wife and taking care of her and moving us through and taking care of my son, in order maybe to shield myself a little bit from that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think looking back, that's probably something I wish I probably would have sat in a bit more, had more vulnerable conversations, whether with her therapist, whatever. And so, yeah, I think in looking back, I would have liked to do that more.
Okay. So, in the kind of a nice, transition segue, you also talk about on your, website, your experience with therapy.
Yeah.
And another thing that you say, you are an advocate. Were you always, or?
Yeah.
So you say you have family that are therapists.
Yeah, I do. So my mom and brother are both marriage and family therapists.
Okay.
So it's in the family. Yeah. Well, one thing I'm really clear about on the blog is I really make it hard attempts to not be prescriptive about parenting because I have not been doing this for very long. Right.
Yeah, sure.
Really, I mean, we're just all falling forward, right? Yeah. In parenting, and I'm not a therapist. I really try to source and cite, you know, work and things that we talk about. But I am a huge fan of the process and a huge advocate for therapy. I think the fact that there are people in this world who understand how to mine the depths. Emotions and what we go through in our human experience and process that is incredible. It has saved my life and it has saved my marriage. It has saved relationships and friendships. And I think everyone should do it. So major plug.
I always I did not pay Ryan.
I know, to say that. I mean, we all have stuff, and to sit and to walk with a therapist through is as important, I would say, as going to the gym, as eating right, taking care of our emotional selves. I cannot speak highly enough of the importance of that in my life.
No, so. I appreciate it. I have to tell really quickly. I remember when I was a shiny new therapist, and people, and now you'll hear when people hear what you do, they first of all, they say, are you diagnosing me? And the answer is yes, I am.
Yeah.
But then the second part of that is they will typically say, well, I don't believe in therapy. I'll hear that from time to time. And I remember early on, I felt like I had to defend that. Oh yeah, well, research, and I've done. And then after you do it for a while and you know, you've just seen it change people's lives over and over again. Mm-hmm. That's one of those things where I'm sorry that you feel that, you know, and actually then part of me thinks, okay, we should probably talk about that.
Yeah.
Right. You know, what are you hiding? What are you afraid of?
Right.
But so I obviously is this is a career. I'm not, you know, a decade plus in and going, I don't know, man, I'm going to keep trying it, but I think, I don't know. But so I appreciate you being, you got to knock down the stigma around mental health.
Really? I think the stigma should be opposite. Like if you don't go,
you're crazy. Right.
I think it's so important, find someone that works, even if you have to, maybe try out some different folks, whatever, find someone that you can connect with, find someone that.
Did you ever have an experience where you didn't necessarily feel that connection?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, for sure. My wife, I've done therapy. I have my therapist I've been working with for years now. But my wife and I have done we've worked with several people in couple situations. Mm-hmm. We've both done individual therapy, but also together we found that both are helpful.
Yeah.
There's people that we haven't necessarily, connected with. And that's you try that.
Right. And I think that's sometimes when people go into therapy, then they are worried that, well, I don't want to offend the therapist. And, mm-hmm. Please. I mean, it's not offensive. It's part of the job that we do. I feel like I'm looking at the camera now. Yeah. It's okay. There's a lot of research that says it doesn't really even matter the modality of the therapist as much as there needs to be that connection. Mm-hmm. So you are in control of that.
Yeah.
Can I shift gears?
Of course. Yeah.
So Meniere's disease. Mm. So this is something I still am not 100% sure or clear on, but I love you have a couple of posts about that. I've had clients with that but can you talk about that, your experience? I mean, takes on a deep dive.
Sure. Yeah. So the short of it is, in 2013.
Okay.
So shortly after my son was born, I started getting a ringing in my ear, in my right ear, that gradually began to just increase.
Wow.
I started losing kind of the lower register, kind of lower tones in the ear, just kind of fluctuating hearing. Eventually I started to have some episodes where I was getting really dizzy, having some vertigo.
And was this months into this ringing of the ears?
A couple months into the ringing. It just kind of, everything kind of built on top of each other.
Okay.
The ringing, the vertigo, and didn't know what was causing it. Had no idea. This was completely new. And started going to a doctor, and one thing led to another, talking about this thing called Meniere's disease. And I'm like, never heard of it.
Yeah.
And eventually, so I started seeing a doctor and head and neck surgeons, different specialists.
Wow.
And a lot of stuff was about prescription medication, things like that. But really the bottom line was like, hey, you have this thing called Meniere's disease, and that's what you're going to have.
Okay.
I was like, hang on, time out.
Yeah.
Like I'm like 33, 34 years old. Like I'm no. We're not just going to just be like, well, you're just going to have to deal with these things for the rest of your life. But they kept on getting worse and worse, to the points where we had some really scary. So for, people with Meniere's disease, the symptoms range from hearing loss, but the vertigo is probably the worst part. You can get, some people describe it as a violent vertigo, like a drop to the ground
and come out of
scenario.
Nowhere.
I mean, it can come out of nowhere. There's also like tinnitus in your ear, which kind of like just like this kind of constant drone or ringing in your ear.
Wow.
And there's a big piece of Meniere's.
And was there a part of you that thought, okay, am I rocking out for so many years? Eventually,
it could be, I don't know. There's no real, the medical description is there is an over amount of liquid in a certain part of your ear.
Okay.
And so, the liquid causes imbalance. Some people are triggered their symptoms visually, some audibly.
Okay.
Different, you know, there's a lot that's unknown. There's no cure for it. And there's about 600,000 people in the US that are diagnosed with Meniere's disease.
Okay.
So it's not something you would probably hear about on a regular basis, right, unless you knew someone who had Meniere's.
Yeah.
There's a couple of celebrities or artists. You know, one of my favorite musical artists, Ryan Adams, uh-huh, has Meniere's. I was at a concert recently of his, and Ryan Adams is actually, he gets triggered visually through light.
Wow.
And so if you go to Ryan Adams' show, he's lit from the back, not from the front.
Wow.
And before the show, this woman came out on stage and she's like, talk to the crowd. She's like, hey, everyone, here's the deal. Ryan Adams has something called Meniere's disease. Please don't take flash photography. It literally could end the show for him.
Wow.
And like, I cry so easy.
Okay.
I'm pretty emotional. I was like, first time I've ever heard someone, I've heard all these people talk about Meniere's disease and awareness. Right. I was just like, my brother, like Meniere's, like I'm with you. Like, you know, so there's a couple celebrities and things like that who have it, who will talk about it. But
did anybody take flash photography though? I mean, I feel like that's still one of those things.
Probably. The show was great, yeah, and he was awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we had some really, really scary incidents, and I tried different, you know, prescriptions and things like that, and nothing worked. And it got to the point where my wife and I were like, we need to figure something else out. I have one of my closest and dearest friends in the world has multiple sclerosis, and she was really looked for more holistic approaches to, okay, dealing with multiple sclerosis and talking about diet and things like that. And so we began to do some research, and I basically went to my friend. I'm like, hey, I need you to just like be my Yoda and, okay, teach me about like what your approach is and what you're doing with diet. So we completely overhauled our diet. Wow. We completely changed a lot of our lifestyle. Once we did that, I went about a year and a half without any episodes. My hearing came back.
What was the diet? I mean, what did you do?
What we learned is something called the Candida diet.
Oh, Candida.
So yeah, okay. So Candida is basically a yeast overgrowth.
Okay.
It's really healing the gut. It's pretty intense. If you're going to go on like a really strict cleanse, I mean, yeah, you're going to cut out sugar, gluten, you're going to cut out dairy, soy, like, I mean, it's pretty much like meat and veggies.
Okay.
Which is tough. You know, you do a clean cut of all those kinds of things. And we made major overhauls to our diet. You know, I have a low sodium diet because, you know, if you have an over amount of liquid in your ear, salt is a water retainer.
Okay.
You know, so you had to keep low sodium diet. But yeah, anyway, so I went a year and a half. I slowly kind of got back into some old eating habits. Mm-hmm. And about a year and a half in, started having some pretty big episodes again, really started impacting work. But I got back on it. And at that time as well, I was introduced to a certain type of chiropractic work.
Okay.
Upper cervical chiropractic work. Something called the Palmer method. Okay. If you're Googling out there,
right?
The Palmer method of chiropractic basically looks at C1, C2 of the spinal column, the head of the snake, and make sure, you know, those of you on or audibly can't see this, but I'm basically putting my fingers together. So, you know, you have C1, C2 like this.
Okay.
If they're off at all, they're going to squeeze your brainstem.
Wow.
So you need to make sure that those are lines, so you're getting optimal nerve flow,
okay,
to everywhere in your body. So I met a woman locally here in Sacramento. Her name is Desiree Crusade. Little plug for Desiree.
There you go.
I started working with her because she was the first medical professional we came across who was like, I can help you. I literally remember my wife and I talking to her in the car when we were first in kind of interviews, and she made connections to me and my health that no one ever made before. Wow. We were like in tears, like we were just filled with hope that she could help us out. So kind of my cocktail for health is I have a strict diet, and I see Desiree and do this chiropractic work. I'm 2 years without any episodes.
Wow.
I still have some hearing loss in my right ear. I don't hear very well out of my right ear, but I will take that over dealing with dizziness and vertigo, because that impacts my life so much. So if you know someone with Meniere's, love them well. It's, you know, having a autoimmune disease or a chronic illness that is invisible is very hard for a lot of people.
Sure.
Because you don't see it. And so
you feel like if you talked about it, would you feel like hey, I'm making excuses, or would you feel like nobody's going to buy this? Or
a little bit sometimes. Yeah. So, cause you know, I'm high functioning.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people, you know, I'm part of a lot of online communities of people with Meniere's, who struggle with employment and work and fatigue.
Yeah.
And, that's really, really hard. So, shout out to people who struggle with Meniere's disease. It's not an easy road. And I've been really fortunate to have access to care and health and a support system that a lot of people don't have. And so we, whether it's Meniere's or whatever, I think there's a lot we can do to help people be successful in their lives.
Yeah. Do you get a lot? What do you get the most feedback for on your website? Is it something like that specific, or is it just a kind of a general, here's something that happened as a dad?
You mean like comments on like posts, certain topics?
Yeah.
I think whenever I talk about some of the health stuff, so Meniere's has been really good. My faith journey is unique and kind of where I've been. I know we might talk about that in a future episode.
Yeah.
But I get a lot of response around that because of kind of where I've been and being a former pastor,
right.
That we got a lot of discussion around those kinds of things.
Okay.
I'm very passionate about, social justice and equality in the world. And so that's a big theme on the blog and in my life.
I like the way you wrote this. Actually, you said a big part of my journey is deconstruction of my privilege and raising my children with self-awareness and discernment when it comes to issues of equality, equity, and our contribution to systems that impact the lives of people. How do you teach a 1 and a 5-year-old? I mean, I love that concept of self-awareness.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, you know, kind of privilege is 101 is if, you know, we have to teach our children about inequality, that's a sign of our own privilege, right? You know, if we had to be taught equality versus experience in ourselves, that's a number one sign of privilege. And it's really hard. I think the biggest thing that we try to focus on is listening. And the real, I feel like in my life, the real spiritual work I do in my life is seeking out people and experiences outside of my own, maybe outside of my own tribe, outside of my own culture, and to listen and immerse myself in other stories and to expose ourselves to different people and perspectives. And so with our children, sometimes this can be challenging, is to be really intentional about putting ourselves in places to listen to other people's perspective, about hearing other stories. It's in, you know, the books we read and the shows that we watch, that they are seeing and experiencing people of different perspective and ideas and listening to those and responding, having discussions about those. My kids are still pretty young, but children perceive a lot more than sometimes I think that we give them credit for even.
Yeah.
And so we try to be very open about those kinds of things. But it's tough because it's something I'm still learning as well. And I have a lot of blind spots still to my own, the privilege that I have in life as a white, straight, man, in culture. And, I have not always been aware of how just things that I did not earn, have given me an advantage in life. I have not always been open and awake to those things. And so the kind of deconstruction of my own privilege has been something that I've been on in these past years. And it can be tricky trying to parent children along the way when you're still trying to figure it out as well. And I know mistakes are going to be made. And I think sometimes, that's one of the biggest challenges of parenting is just knowing that, like, I know I'm going to mess some things up.
Right. Yeah.
Like, you know, I know that my kids will be in therapy someday for things I did, but I actually hope they do go to therapy. Maybe that's a good sign that like I did something right. If they actually have the wherewithal to like go see a therapist, maybe that's okay. But knowing that I'm not going to get it all right, I'm going to make mistakes, but being able to learn along the way. That's one thing I would say about my own parents. If they're listening to this, shout out to you, is that my parents are in their 60s and still learning.
Okay.
Like still growing. My mom will be like, tell me about what you're reading. She'll literally pick up the book and read it so we can have conversation about it.
Okay.
And I want to continually be that way to be able to, change and do so along, with my family. So
I like you use the word intentional. I feel like, we've talked about empathy. We've talked about being vulnerable. I mean, because I feel like those are the components, right?
Yeah.
The empathy piece with the kids, and not just kind of telling them what they should do or should feel or that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Right. I had a cultural diversity class when I was getting my master's degree. And I remember, this is funny that you bring this up. So, a guy that I want to get on the podcast, Dr. Kevin Christoph, African-American gentleman, amazing. I love this guy. I really did. I to this day, I will be in communication with him. And, but I remember going in there and, you know, I remember saying, no, I understand because, you know, I have an African-American friend, you know, and he was the first one to say kind of what you were saying. It's like, you know, if you're trying to convince me that you have a friend, you know, I don't know if you're really kind of on board with really what that experience is like. And he taught me so much in that class.
Well, it's a journey to understand how privilege and race impacts us personally, right? There's that inward revolution that needs to, I think, take place in that regard, which is hard. But there's also understanding the systemic impacts of those types of things and how we might find ourselves complicit in systemic issues of injustice, race, inequality, economic injustice, all these types of things. And so for me, it's just really about listening and showing up alongside those that are fighting for inequality. You know, my kids and I, we were just out at a rally. We're here in Sacramento, and I took both my kids because it's important that my kids see me showing up.
Okay.
See that it's important to take action. This is not, griping about it on Facebook is one thing, and there's a place for that.
Sure.
We need to be able to have those kind of digital conversations, but if it's not met with showing up, whether it's at the polls or alongside others, I want my kids to see that in me. So at the end of the day, I think that's what my kids are going to take away from their experience with me, is what they saw, how they see me showing up in the world.
I love it. I have to throw one thing out there before we maybe wrap this up too. When you're talking about your kids will go to therapy, I have four kids, teenagers, one 20-year-old.
Yeah.
And they know that the best way to push my button is to say, I think I'll be talking about this in therapy, Dad. It breaks my heart, right?
Yeah.
Or I guess makes me proud.
Which one,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, Ryan, I can't believe the time has gone fast.
Yeah, it's been really good.
But I like the idea of a part two. I mean, I'd love to hear about, you know, more about your kind of faith journey, about what that was like.
And I'd like your overall message just of, I mean, I guess fairness in general. I mean, I really would love to hear more about that.
I think it's important to talk about, we can do it in small ways, talking about fairness and talking about how making sure everyone has same opportunities. We look for those micro moments to teach those kinds of things, and we do it through stories.
Okay.
So looking at, you know, when we read at night and go to bed, you know, we're telling stories about different types of people and how he feels about that, what his perspective is on that. And, you know, he's going to learn and make mistakes, but, you know, for us, it's important to, you know, looking for schools, you know, the academic stuff's always going to be there, but like, what is this going to be his relational and social experience? What does the diversity of that space look like? And I think they're just really important things for us. It was not always part of my mentality.
Yeah, sure.
Where
can people find you?
You can find me at daringtodad.com. Instagram's great. I'm on the gram all the time. You can find me there. So daringtodad.com. Looking for people to collaborate with other people. If there's other dads out there who are writers, especially if you're listening to people, I'm looking for dads in all different forms. So single dads, same-sex partners, men of color who have different experiences, again, share that diversity and different perspectives. I'm looking for people to write.
Love it.
For the blog. So if you're out there, hit me up.
All right. I can't wait to have you back on.
Tony, this has been great.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Hey. Appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Compressed emotions flying past our heads and out the other end. The pressures of the daily grind. It's wonderful. Elastic waste and rubber ghost. I'm floating past the midnight hour. They push aside the things that matter most. It's wonderful. We'll be right back. legs and hearts you bore.